Every 8 seconds, a baby is born in the U.S., on average, adding to a world population that already totals more than 7 billion people. What does this mean for the future? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we'll check in with population experts here in Iowa, Liesl Ethington and Dave Peters, to learn about our state's trends and what they tell us about our economy and the future of our communities. We'll also talk with global population expert Bill Ryerson about the connection between local and global population growth. What concerns you about our growing numbers on this planet? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. From this hour, we want to talk about population trends in our corner of the world, but also to zoom out and talk about the nation and the world and how we're all interconnected. Iowa's population showed an increase for the 26th consecutive year. That's for the 12 months ending July 1st. Those numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau. Slow and steady, I guess that's a good way to sum up Iowa's population growth. The state population grew to more than 3 million people, 3.09 million as of July, up over just over 15,000 people in the course of 12 months. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's zoom out to look at our country as a whole. The population of the U.S. grew, but barely, very slowly. The number of Americans grew by less than 1%. That happens to be the lowest growth rate since the Great Depression in the 1930s. The census estimates U.S. population is now just over 316 million people. According to the U.S. Census, one birth every 8 seconds in the U.S. on average. That adds to our world population. World population, more than 7 billion people. So I threw out a bunch of numbers. We want to make sense of some of the numbers this hour and get your feedback as well. What do these trends in Iowa, in the nation, in the world mean for our future, for our communities in the present and the future? How are our populations, for instance, in Iowa, connected to what's going on in the rest of the country, in the world? And we want to check in with some population experts here in Iowa. Joining us for the entire hour, Liesl Ethington is the Iowa Community Indicators Program Assistant Scientist at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hi, Liesl.
Hi.
Great to have you with us. Also with you in the studio, Dave Peters, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Extension Rural Sociologist at ISU. Hi, Dave. Welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And we'd like to invite our listeners to join our conversation this hour as we discuss population trends and the challenges that face us because of those trends. What concerns you about our growing numbers on this planet? What's been happening in terms of population in your corner of the state, of the Midwest? Has your population been growing in your community, or have you been losing population? And how does that population change make itself felt in your community? 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Liesl, can I start with you to tell us a little bit about the growth in Iowa? I said growth up to 3.09 million people. Where are we seeing the most growth in Iowa?
We continue to see the most growth accruing to our metropolitan areas. This is a pretty long-standing trend in Iowa.
Okay, so population, name some of them, please.
Polk County, Dallas County, Linn County, Johnson County, Pottawatomie. So the places where our biggest cities are located and some of the surrounding counties are considered parts of those metropolitan areas.
Mm-hmm. And what are our highest growth rates in the areas you mentioned?
We've got Dallas County is the fastest growing, and that's continued over at least the last decade. I don't know the actual rate that they're mm-hmm. growing.
So but the West Des Moines area.
Mm-hmm. I can give you the growth rates for the metropolitan counties as a whole. I like to look a little bit longer term than just the year to year. So if we look at what's happened since we conducted the last census, our metro counties have grown just over, for a two-year period, about 2%. And our non-metro counties are actually losing population. They've lost over 0.5% of their population during that time.
Mm-hmm. If I picture the state of Iowa, where are the losing areas? Where are the most more sparsely populated areas?
The non-metro counties are scattered throughout the state, but we do have a big section of them in the western part of the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dave Peters, tell us about the trend of Iowa's population growth over the few years from your perspective.
Well, echoing what Liesl had said, that she's absolutely right, that what we've seen is in Iowa a steady but slow growing population, and that population growth is centered in what I call our Iowa's population triangle. So if you go from Des Moines east through Iowa City and Davenport, then north to Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and back through Ames and to the Des Moines area, all of those metro areas and larger towns and rural areas within that triangle have all seen growth. So even rural areas in that triangle have seen growth because they're very close to employment opportunities in large metro centers. So that's where the growth is occurring. Now, a little bit of perspective from 2010 to 2013, Iowa grew by 1.5% over those 3 years. So that's a little bit slower than the national growth rate, but it's much faster than the growth rate for the Midwest region. So we're growing a little bit slower than the rest of the country, but we're growing faster than other Midwestern states in our region, which is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Any explanation as why Iowa should be leading the Midwest pack in terms of population growth?
Well, my belief is that it's we have a very vibrant metro area. We have vibrant Ames and Iowa City drawing a lot of individuals associated with the universities. The Des Moines area is a financial and insurance center, and that's driven people into those areas.
Mm-hmm. Liesl, out-migration is a term that we want to bring into the conversation. What is out-migration, and to what extent is it happening here in Iowa?
When we think about population change, there's basically two ways that a region's population can grow. One of them is natural change, where that's more births in the area than deaths. Everything else we explain with migration. Unfortunately for Iowa, a lot of our counties experience net out migration, which means we get more people moving out than moving in over any given time period. I think one of the reasons that Iowa's population rates look better in the last few years is our rates of out migration have actually slowed. And I believe that's likely due to the recession. People a little bit less willing to move if things were not as bad in Iowa as other parts of the country. They were probably less likely to leave the state seeking other employment opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you see it, Dave Peters, this out-migration, the slowing of it because of the Great Recession?
Primarily, yes. So we'll be able to slow out-migration because we have other opportunities for people to move within Iowa. As I mentioned before, our metropolitan areas recently, particularly since the late 90s, to generate a lot of employment opportunities, particularly for our college-educated population, that hasn't been true in previous periods, in the 80s and the 70s. And so we've been able to retain more of our youth, where before they would migrate out to Minneapolis or Kansas City or the coast. We've been able to retain that more because the economies in our metro areas are more vibrant.
Mm-hmm. What are your statistics, Liesl, show about young people, the movement of young people within our state in their 20s and 30s?
We see primarily our metro areas are capturing those people, and we can't really track where they come from and where they go to. We can just really look at the growth of those population groups region by region. If we just look at the 2 years from 2010 to 2012, our state's population of people who are ages 20 to 39 actually grew by about 12,000 people. Unfortunately, for much of the state, 92% of that increase accrued to our state's 21 metropolitan counties.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast preponderance are going to the metro areas.
Dave Peters, I wonder if what we're hearing about when we specifically talk about younger people is part of this idea that, you know, a generation or two ago, people would move to a certain place because of a job. And younger people are in a position, many of them to move to a place they would like to live and then find a job.
Yeah, I think that happens more on the margins than on the average. I think we like to believe that's the case, but I think overall, from a large macroeconomic, macro demographic perspective, that's not occurring. People still move to where the jobs are, and if they're not moving to actually the city where their job is, they're moving to the region. So some jobs, yes, can be outsourced, if you will, to rural areas through information technology, but most businesses still want their employees to be proximate to the physical location. So I think while that, yes, it's happening, I don't think it's a very prominent phenomenon. I think it's more on an ad hoc, marginal basis than being widespread.
Population experts Dave Peters and Liesl Ethington with us on this edition of River to River as we look at population trends in Iowa, connecting them with the U.S. and the world trends, what they say about our economy, our communities, our future. Let's go to Fred in Grinnell. Fred, you're joining us. What concerns you in this discussion?
Well, there was something on the TV recently. I'm not sure what county it was in, probably in the southern three tiers, was talking about rent was cheaper down there because there wasn't so much employment. And then also I heard recently that there was some place in some county in Nebraska where the older lady had basically up and died, and nobody wanted the house, so they put a sign up front, free house, rather than letting the house sit empty. And now with some people able to do their work on the computer, rent is a big thing for a lot of people. So I know Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, Ames, et cetera, rent is far from cheap there. I haven't priced it in smaller towns because I'm not a renter. Just wondered what their thoughts were on all that.
Okay. Fred, thank you for your question from Grinnell. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Dave Peters, can I hand you that? What's the renting price of housing? How does that affect our population trends?
Well, as Fred mentioned, he's absolutely right that rents are much more high in larger metropolitan areas, and they're particularly high in our college metropolitan areas, Ames and Iowa City. And one of the problems with that is deals with poverty and income inequality. So if you're in a rural area and you have relatively limited skills and you want to better your economic circumstances by moving out of your rural community into a larger city to take advantage of the employment opportunities, you're limited to some degree because you're not able to earn a wage to support yourself largely because of housing costs. And so in some ways we're seeing poverty concentrated in some areas of rural Iowa because individuals that may want to leave, they're not able to move to, say, Des Moines or to Ames or to Iowa City and get a job that can support themselves primarily due to housing costs.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. What are your concerns about the growing numbers on this planet or the varying growth or loss of population here in Iowa in the Midwest? What's happening in terms of population in your corner of the state? 1-866-780-9100. Joining us now, Nick Burgess is with us of North Liberty. Nick is the North Liberty Communications Director for that city. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing great. Get in touch with you because North Liberty is on that list of the fastest-growing areas in the state, right behind Dallas County. How fast is North Liberty growing?
Well, that's a really good question. So the 2010 census had us just a little over 13,000. We already estimate at the end of last year that we were above 15,000, and we were expecting more and more growth here in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. And give us some perspective. A few years ago, North Liberty was a town of how many?
Well, the 2000 census had us at just 5,367 people. Mm-hmm. So we've tripled our size in the last 14 years.
Okay. So what are the challenges presented with this population growth that you're having to face there in North Liberty?
Well, one of the big challenges is just keeping up with infrastructure. Cities want to plan ahead, and we don't want to be putting out fires when it comes to roads and sewer and water and just basic municipal services. So we're trying to keep up with our roads, but our population growth is just outpacing that in a lot of cases. So keeping up with that is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, we had a state-of-the-art water pollution control plant come online. It cost us $8.4 million. And now with the local school district is expecting to build a new high school nearby in the next few years, and we're working to working on our expansion of that plant, and that carries like a $13 million price tag. Mm-hmm. For a plant that's not that old already.
Do you have an idea of how many complaints come in that you can tie directly to the lack of being able to keep up with such a great pace of growth? That the answer is, we're working on it.
Well, there's certainly things like, nobody loves road construction. We try to do those things now, but they're big projects. It's not just patching holes and stuff like that. I can't give you numbers for the number of complaints, but we do have people who want to see new services. We're no longer a bedroom community, and people, as we grow, have expectations for us. They want us to provide new services. They want us to provide cultural amenities. They want us to provide transportation services, things that small town Iowa doesn't have to do, but growing North Liberty does.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what do you expect in the future? Is the outlook for growth, you say tripling since the year 2000, are going to continue on that steep slope of growth?
It's hard to say. We obviously are working with our growth has meant that we're working closely with nearby municipalities. To make sure that we can, as we start to sort of grow closer and closer with, Coralville and Tiffin, that's going to be important for us. It's hard to say sort of what we expect to grow. We continue to, we're going to annex some land to the east and we have to provide municipal services to that for this high school and the residences that are going to come. Around that, we've got full schools, and another new school nearby is only going to increase that demand further into the future, I would expect.
Mm-hmm. What's driving the population increase in North Liberty?
That's a really good question, Ben. I think we have a great quality of life. I think we have a lot of access to services because we're near the University of Iowa, because we're near Cedar Rapids. So there's convenience there, but we still are a small enough town that folks come here looking for that sort of neighborhood small town feel, and we can still offer that. So I think that's mm-hmm. I think that's part of it.
And nice recreation. You're very close to Lake McBride and the Coralville Reservoir.
Yeah. And we've invested heavily in our outdoor recreation. We have an extensive trail system that we've been working on for decades, and it ties into other areas. You can bike from North Liberty to Iowa City now. With the Dubuque Street Trail that opened a couple years ago, you can bike around town, we have a lot of amenities to offer. We have our community center here in North Liberty, which opened in '97. We expanded it in 2004, and we just expanded it again last year when we tripled our library space.
Okay.
So we have these amenities that people expect and. They're new because we're a growing community.
Nick Burgess, thank you very much for joining us, Communications Director of North Liberty, where it's booming. Thank you, Nick Burgess.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Yeah.
Could I add to Nick's comments?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave.
This is
Go
Dave
ahead.
Peters. A little bit of the work I've done in the Des Moines Metro, just to add that one of the interesting paradoxes of these small communities that experience rapid growth like North Liberty, what we find is that taxes become very burdensome. So the taxes have to expand, particularly taxes for the school district to build new schools and bonds. And one of the issues we've seen in the Des Moines Metro is these long-time residents of these small towns that want to retire are often unable to retire there because of the high property taxes in the state in those communities where they've lived there for 40 or 50 years. The community expanded rapidly. There's demand for schools, new city services that increases property taxes, and that does place somewhat of a burden on the retired population on fixed incomes.
Mm-hmm. Liesl Etherington, do you see other challenges not mentioned, or do you want to expand on any things about the areas that are growing most rapidly in Iowa?
One of the things that is a result of having pockets of growth and other areas that are not growing, and then also related back to the issue of the differential rents, we see growing rates of commuting across the state. And that's also something that we've seen through the decades just increase. We get lots of cross-commuting, you know, couples where one spouse goes one direction and the other goes another direction. And I think that has implications in the longer term if we're starting to think about energy policy and environmental factors and the value of people's time and the costs. All
so,
of these
so do we
up.
Know? We know that we're commuting on average, and the average Iowan is commuting more to longer to work.
Yes, we do. We've seen an increase each time we take these measurements, which used to be every 10 years, and now we actually get data annually. We see gradual increases in the percentage of people who commute to a job someplace other than where they live.
Mm-hmm. And what are these implications that you see facing us in the future because of that trend?
A lot of it depends on what energy prices do, gas prices. Eventually, over the long term, people do tend to want to move to where they work. And so the rates of commuting might level off. It's pretty unsustainable over a long term for people to commute very long distances.
What about our farm population in the latest census? Lisa, fill us in about that.
One of the concerns, I think, over the years has been the aging of the farm population. And the last ag census, which was done in 2007, showed us that, indeed, the average age of our principal farm operators is increasing. So in 2007, the average age of farm operators was about 56 years old. And if we look back to 1982, it was about 48 years old. One of the things that doesn't always show up right away in the numbers, though, is we have some farmers waiting in the wings. So if we look at second operators, the average age of those farmers is younger. So it could just be the case that we've got some farmers who are working longer than they might have planned to, but there is somebody else on the farm mm-hmm. who is younger and ready to take over.
In terms of farm population, are we very similar to the surrounding Midwestern states?
Our farm population, if we just look at people who claim to be farm principal operators, they're about 2.4% of our population. So it's really a very small segment of the population. And that's very similar to our neighbors in the Midwest and the Plains.
Mm-hmm. What implications do you see there, Dave Peters, the future of the farm population?
Yeah, that's in terms of the farm population in rural communities, I think one of the issues is how to provide public services, health services, social services, educational services to farm families that live in a very dispersed, sparsely populated area. So as most other people in rural communities leave, you still need a certain number of farmers to operate farms and ranches. And that's the challenge is how do you provide services to a very dispersed, sparsely populated clientele? And that's why you see continuation of school consolidations. You may see some consolidations of county services. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the big issue, particularly in the western part of the state that Liesl mentioned earlier.
Dave Peters is with us of Iowa State University. Also, Liesl Ethington, our population experts, looking at the numbers in the latest census, what they mean for the present and the future. What's been happening in terms of population in your corner of the state, of the Midwest? Has it been growing, losing population? And how does that change in population in your community make itself felt? Give us your perspective. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. When we come back, we'll tie our numbers into the nation and the globe. So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, over the noon hour, we'll talk about the places in the world we should be watching for changes in U.S. foreign policy as we move through 2014 with our political analysts, Lindsey Kahn and Jim McCormick. Places like Iran, Syria, Pakistan, the Middle East, Japan, and China. Hope you'll tune in to find out how these far-flung places, I guess you'd say, are affecting us here in the United States and here in Iowa as well. Today we're talking about population trends in Iowa, in the U.S., in the world. Iowa's population increasing for the 26th consecutive year. That's in the 12 months ending on July 1st, the numbers just released from the U.S. Census Bureau. Slow and steady, we've been growing. That's a good way to sum up our population growth. We're now to just over 3 million people as of July, up over 15,000 people in the course of the 12 months that were measured. Population of the U.S. is growing, but barely. Number of Americans growing by less than a percent. And that's the lowest growth rate since the 1930s, the Great Depression. Our U.S. population now just over 316 million. Picking apart these numbers, interpreting for us, Dave Peters of Iowa State University, Liesl Ethington. Liesl is the Iowa Community Indicators Program Assistant Scientist at ISU. Dave Peters, Assistant Professor of Sociology and Extension Rural Sociologist at ISU. We want you to join our conversation. What concerns you about our growing numbers on this planet, or what's been happening in terms of population in your corner of the state? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Post a message on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk if you prefer. Liesl Ethington and Dave Peters, let's talk a little bit more about Iowa's demographic. Can you give us a profile, Liesl, of who we are? This just over 3 million people. Who are we? What groups make up those 3 million people? Give us a picture of us.
We're still predominantly non-Hispanic white, much more so than the United States, although that has been changing over the last couple of years and over the last decade. Our diversity is growing, and that's non-white population and then also the Hispanic population. Those groups are growing more rapidly than our non-Hispanic white. Mm-hmm. Then in terms of age, we are a bit older on average than the nation as a whole. And that's really the same story that we've been telling for the last 20 or 30 years.
It's really important that you mention the age there and the Hispanic population is Dave Peters, because if I'm remembering right, there are only two states in the U.S. That lost population during the last census. Maine, I'm forgetting the other state, but very few immigrants, Hispanics moving in. Is that what really caused our population to increase?
That's part of it. If you look at the birth rate data, we have two phenomena going on. First, we do have in-migration from outside of Iowa, and that's not – the fastest growth has been of the Hispanic in-migrants. In terms of numbers, it's still the white non-Hispanic coming in. But yes, the Hispanic population has grown. But what we also see is relatively stable birth rates of that Hispanic population. So what's driven population declines or slow population growth in the rest of the nation is that the Hispanic birth rate has really tumbled for the Hispanic population in the U.S. But the Iowa Hispanic population, that birth rate has remained relatively stable. So while we have Hispanics moving into the state, their birth rates are still fairly high relative to the rest of the country, and that's probably buoying up a bit our population numbers.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Charlene from Ankeny is joining us. Hi, Charlene. I know Ankeny is a traditional place of great population growth in recent years. You want to comment or a question about that?
Yes, I'm enjoying your conversation today, and it made me think back over how Ankeny has grown. I first moved to Ankeny in 1962. My husband worked at John Deere, which back then was probably the only, or if not the only, employer, or at least large employer, and how that demographic even has changed. Now we have a population that we're like a bedroom community for. They work in Des Moines as the banking and insurance industries have grown, and so we have non-John Deere workers now in Ankeny. But one of the things that strikes me, and I don't know, you know, when you think of progress and growth, whether it's pros or cons, but, you know, back in 1962, for example, in the first several years, we had three grade schools probably and a junior high and a high school. Now we have two high schools, and I can't tell you how many grade schools we have. We had a volunteer fire department. Now we have a career fire department. We have, a couple new fire stations. Police have grown. I remember when we had a police chief and maybe three policemen, and now I can't tell you how many full-time police we have.
Mm-hmm. All these things you're mentioning, Charlene, does that give you a good feeling? Growth give you a good feeling, or does it get you the feeling that you're being crowded a bit there in Ankeny?
Well, I think the big thing is for some it's a tax burden. For the tax base has grown because we're 45,000 people thereabouts. Employment, jobs. We have more teachers, more policemen, more firemen, more storekeepers. But we also have a tax burden to make sure that we have all of our safety needs met and our societal needs met. But so I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if it's a pro or a con when we have small communities growing to large. I used to know my neighbors in two square blocks at least. I know my neighbor on my north and south now. So, socially, the larger a city becomes, mm-hmm. the less, you have socialization.
Right. Charlene, thank you very much for your view. We're going to move on now. Thank you for the view from Ankeny, Iowa, from mm-hmm. one of our listeners, Charlene. Any comment about that, Dave Peters?
Yeah, I think what Charlene had mentioned is correct, that when you have smaller towns that are very close, that were in the past very close-knit, people had a lot of identity with the community. When you have a lot of in-migration, particularly outsiders that don't work in town, essentially they just sleep in the community and they drive to another city to work, that definitely loosens the bonds, the cohesion of the community. And that, for long-time residents, that's can be particularly painful as they lose the identity, what they feel is the identity of their community. And on the taxing issue, one of the, as I mentioned before, that particularly for retirees or people that no longer have kids in school, to pay high taxes can be burdensome. Whereas if you have kids in the school district, you're getting a benefit out of it by paying those taxes. And so there sometimes can be resentment between longtime residents and newcomers on that tax issue and services issue.
Interpreting Population Trends with Dave Peters and Liesl Ethington of Iowa State University. Now joining us also, Bill Ryerson. He's the president of Population Media Center. That's based in Vermont. Also the CEO of the Population Institute in Washington, D.C. Bill Ryerson joining us by phone. Hi, Bill.
Ben, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being with us. Now, we've been talking a lot about Iowa, its place in the Midwest and in the nation. Give us the big picture of population growth in the world. What should we know about what's been happening recently?
On a global basis, the population is growing by about the equivalent of a new Egypt or new Ethiopia every year, about 83 million net growth in the world's population each year. So that's adding about 225,000 people to the dinner table tonight who weren't with us at the dinner table last night. And so
225,000 in one day.
In one day. That's the average growth per day. And that means that the demand for just basic food supplies has been rising steadily over several decades. Back in the late 60s, a rather well-known biologist named Paul Ehrlich forecast a serious famine in India, not knowing of the work of Norman Borlaug creating Green Revolution crops that would turn India into a food exporter for a number of years. But indeed, the time that the Green Revolution has bought us is close to running out, and now food experts like Lester Brown are looking at the trends of sinking water tables. For example, India, China, and the U.S., the top three grain producers of the world, all have sinking underground aquifers because they're being overpumped for irrigation purposes. And so food security is once again a very big issue. India's water table and parts of India are dropping by about 10 feet a year. Mm-hmm. And farms all over India are turning into desert, and farmers are giving up. Mass suicides of farmers going on in India because of their crop failures and inability to pay their debts. And so, indeed, the growing numbers of people just demanding basic food supplies is a very great concern in terms of both human suffering and more broadly global political instability.
So what I hear you saying is we had the great gloom and doom, the wave of gloom and doom in the 60s and 70s about the world population, the carrying capacity of the planet and so forth, and it subsided chiefly because of the work of people like Iowa Norman Borlaug, who engineered this green revolution, but that's not the answer forever.
No, he, in fact, was a great believer in the need for communications, the type Population Media Center is doing, and served on our advisory board until his death, precisely because he realized when he was developing these crops that it was easier to develop the high-yield strains of wheat, rice, and other grain products than it was to get the farmers to use them. And it took all kinds of strategies to get farmers to adopt innovative crops that ultimately would benefit them financially. And he realized similarly with regard to population that unless we motivated people to want smaller families and to delay marriage until adulthood and to space childbearing and all the other related steps such as daughter education that lead to healthier and wealthier families, we would ultimately run into the same crisis that he was addressing when he developed these crops in India. Mm-hmm. And so, indeed, Population Media Center is using primetime media to model various behaviors like daughter education and use of family planning through character evolution in primetime, what you could call soap operas, serialized dramas.
This is the so-called Sabido method?
That's correct. Miguel Sabido was a telenovela producer in Mexico and in the 70s created this strategy based on the work of Stanford psychologist Albert Bandura. It's a very successful and hugely cost-effective method of helping people adopt healthful behaviors without ever telling them what to do. It's just modeling behaviors, good and bad, and showing the consequences of different behaviors and showing key characters who transition in their behavior and realize the benefits of doing things like sending their daughters to school or stopping child marriage or use of family planning, that with the huge popularity of these programs leads to changes in norms among the audience.
Bill Ryerson is with us of the Population Media Center based in Vermont. Let's go to Anthony in Fredericksburg. Anthony, you've been listening the entire hour, wanted to join in. I think you have something along the lines of what Bill Ryerson has been commenting on.
Yes, I do. I just want to start by saying I love the topics that you tackle on your show.
Thank you.
I moved from Portland, Oregon to Fredericksburg, Iowa, and I currently now live in a town that was about the size of the last apartment complex I lived in. I think the exponential growth of the population is going to have an effect on the exponential use of resources as well. One part because we don't face it on a day-to-day basis. You know, when we go to Walmart, the store shelves are full. We don't see how much we're actually using on a daily basis. And as well as, like, I was just wondering what type of as far as moving out and not building up, I think that should be something that's tackled a little bit more aggressively because we're going to need that space for food. So, I mean, we should stop building our towns out and start building them up.
Okay, thank you for those comments, Anthony. Let's get a reaction from Bill and perhaps Dave or Lisa. Bill, your reaction to Anthony.
First, I generally agree with what Anthony has to say, and I was thinking as we were talking at the beginning of this segment about associating population growth with good. Indeed, as long as resources like water, energy, and various minerals and metals are not facing limits, we associate population growth with good because it generally is the result of economic good times and people moving in at a community level to places where there are job opportunities and moving out where the economy is in depression. So people associate population growth with good, but indeed in a world of limits, it's quite the opposite, and it's time for all of us to rethink the situation. And in order to achieve global sustainability, we do need to, first of all, buy more time with maximizing farmland, but also for the health and welfare of people in high-growth countries like sub-Saharan Africa, we need to move towards replacement-level fertility and help people achieve wealthier and healthier lives than they can do so when they're having 6, 7, or 8 children.
Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that while you're telling us about the concerns of the global population, it's in some sense hard for us to worry about that in Iowa when our population is slow and steady increase, and there's plenty of land, plenty of places to live, Bill Ryerson.
You're correct, and certainly some places that you mentioned, Maine, have had declining populations, and people are concerned about that, and people are wringing their hands over the aging of the Japanese population. But the world marketplace is such that, indeed, while the population of Iowa is not growing rapidly, the places where growth is slow or has stopped, and even those places where growth is in decline, or numbers are in decline, those are the places that are going to be the best positioned to withstand what is going to be a very different time that we're facing in the next 20 years from what we've experienced in the last 20 years.
So as we finish up the last 5 minutes of this program, give us your view of the future and the challenges we face. We want to get around to all three of you. But Bill Ryerson, is it a dystopia that we're looking at in some sense?
In some sense, yes. I mean, certainly many of the minerals and metals that our industrial civilization is based on are non-renewable and are, by definition, in decline. And not all of those can necessarily be replaced by some other replacement commodity. So, indeed, we're facing a situation now with the decline of oil, for example, that's used in all aspects of agriculture, combined with the decline of available fresh water, that will force us to address global sustainability issues in a way that we haven't had to do so in the last 50 years.
Liesl Ethington, what are the questions you think we should be asking ourselves or looking at as we cope with the population trends in the future?
Going back to something that Bill said, where we generally associate population growth as a good, it's a problem, I think, not just in terms of what's coming down the road, but for a lot of Iowa's communities, they've really bought into that business mantra that if we're not growing, we're dying. And that can really lead to some unfortunate policy decisions where they make decisions at the expense of the people in a place hoping to get new people. So in broader terms, I think we really do need to rethink the notion that growth is always good.
Dave Peters, what do you see in the future?
In terms of global population issues and conflict between nations, I think I have a very dim view. I think that in the developing world where you have limited water, poor water quality, low food and booming populations, the resources are concentrated in one country and the population is concentrated in another. That, I think, is going to inevitably lead to conflict. I think while the cultural programs to promote change are positive, I think they take decades to see an effect. And my worry is that we don't have decades, that we're going to see definitely regional conflicts erupt over water, over food, over land, conflicts over biotechnology, conflicts over what those developing countries see as Western intervention in their cultures. I see it's going to lead to civil wars in certain countries, disruptions of trade, probably increases in terrorism, and perhaps even some revolutions in some countries as food and land become and water become so scarce that people will be forced to take matters.
Huge trends that we're talking about and some very dark themes here. Bill Ryerson, how do we not feel helpless as individuals living here in Iowa where land and resources seem to be plentiful?
Well, the American people have repeatedly expressed their desire to have growth in the U.S. stop. And indeed, it's very much the case that growth per se does not pay for itself. If it did, we wouldn't have so many governments in deep debt. We associate growth with good economic times, but indeed the growth itself, as your two other guests mentioned, can increase the tax burden and not pay for itself. So I think the way for people to feel some control over this is to assert themselves and to make it known that they do not want policies made at their community level that promote growth at the expense of the people already living there.
Okay, thank you very much, all three of you, for joining us. Bill Ryerson of the Population Media Center based in Vermont, Dave Peters, and Liesl Ethington of Iowa State University. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us.
Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining in with your comments and questions as we discussed population trends. Our program is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Also help from Cooper Hallmeyer today. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And Charity Nebbe has just joined me. Charity, let's find out what's tomorrow at 10 o'clock on your program.
Well, of course, we know that a lot of important things happen here in the Midwest and have happened here in the Midwest, although we don't get a lot of credit for that. Tomorrow on the show, I'm going to talk with John Locke, who's the author of a new book called The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, and also historian Leo Landis. We're going to talk about the history of the Prairie Midwest and why it matters.
That sounds fascinating. Also, tomorrow on this program, Politics Day, will be looking outward to Iran, Syria, Pakistan, other countries to find out how U.S. policies may change in 2014 because of happenings, evolving politics in those countries. Hope you'll join us. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.